There's some ivory tinkling, Wendy.
We have Rick Kogan in the studio.
Playing the piano.
Yes, what do you Rick, think? You sound magnificent.
You've been practicing.
I have been really so practicing.
So good.
I got to ask you, first of all, were you at Woodstock?
No.
All right, I lose.
One day off air, I'll tell you why I didn't go to Woodstock. Oh. Some friends of mine did, but...
Really? So there was a chance of you going.
I get half point credit?
You get a half a point. Sure, Wendy. Yeah,
but this is like the nostalgia show today, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Woodstock. Now we're going even deeper.
Right.
Deeper.
Well, now you do your weekend show.
Chicago Fire started on October 8th.
When the Ten Commandments came down from Mount Sinai, were you there, Rick? Did
yes.
you see that? You were for the...
They needed some editing. I was fine to do it.
Wendy and I started talking about Mr. Kelly's a couple weeks ago. I don't even remember why. I can't remember why, but it just came up in the conversation, and we were both sharing stories, and to both of us at the same time, we said, we know somebody who knows everything about Mr. Kelly's, and it's you.
Yeah. I don't know everything, but I know plenty. At least I was there. You know, Mr. Kelly's was at the corner of Rush and Bellevue, where Gibson's now sits.
Yes.
And oddly, so oddly, way before... You asked me to come on the show. I had made arrangements to meet Tom Dreesen there for lunch
because
that's his hangout. So I will be on the hallowed ground that was Mr. Kelly.
Yeah.
But I was lucky enough to go there. It ran from about 53 to, I know, 75. And my father would take me when I was a teenager. It was actually one of the first places I had a drink because I met my dad. I'm about 18 years old. And he says, well, you have a cold. And I said, I do, Dad. And he says, maybe you should have a drink. And I thought, wow. You mean and I don't have to drink in the closet at home? I can be sitting with you and have a drink. And we saw Mort Saul that night.
Oh, you did?
I remember it distinctly.
Great political comedian.
Oh, my God. Still alive.
So good. Still alive. Hasn't worked in years, but he's still alive.
I know. But it was, it's one of those legendary clubs that only... could have existed in that time frame. I mean, you know the people. I have a great anecdote from it. Barbara Streisand, her first out of New York appearance was at Mr. Kelly's in 1963.
Really?
And this is what she told my friend Howard Reich a couple weeks ago in the Tribune. Okay, I'll share a little Chicago story. When I first came here, I was enchanted by how beautiful the beach was. So one night after the show at Mr. Kelly's, I went with a photographer who'd been hired to shoot a magazine article about me down to Oak Street Beach. We took a bunch of shots there, and then we waited for the spectacular postcard-ready sunrise. I love the mood and memory of that early morning shoot so much that about a year later, when I was looking for an cover photo for the cover of my People album, I chose one of the pictures of the beach shot. A funny thing, though, I picked one with my back to the camera. Some people at the label thought that was a terrible idea. So it was a sweet little victory when People won the Grammy Award for Best Album Cover.
Wow. Look at that.
Isn't that
wow.
great? Yeah, I wish I'd seen at Kelly's is the young Barbara Streisand, but I was only 11. So.
You said something a minute ago that I have to ask you about. You said that Mr. Kelly's could have only existed in that time and place. I understand that, but I don't understand that. What does that mean exactly?
Well, the sort of financial, after Mr. Kelly's, after 75, people like Steve Martin, George Carlin, Sarah Vaughan began to play bigger venues where the price rose accordingly because you could charge more for tickets. It was economics.
Yeah.
It was the only reason. And many of these people, George Carlin among them, were just thrilled to have a place in Chicago that was sophisticated. Remember, there were no stand-up clubs at the time. Maybe you had the Playboy Club.
Probably, yeah.
Maybe
that would've...
other venues had, a piano player.
Yeah.
But this was a sophisticated, nice kind of... It was a dinner theater kind of setting.
Yeah.
The George and Oscar Marienthal, the two visionary brothers who ran it, also ran the London House just across... I didn't know that. Oh, my God. Just up the river here.
So this was a dinner place.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't just comics. There were musical acts as well.
It was mostly known. Because many of the singers have gone, except Streisand, we associate it mostly with, oh, my God, that's where Steve Martin first played. Oh, my God, that's where George Carlin was. Oh, my God, Lenny Bruce was there. So we associated with those. It was mostly a music club, almost predominantly a music club. I could rattle off. And a lot of people, Sarah Vaughan, Buddy Greco, Della Reese, Ella Fitzgerald recorded live albums.
Wow.
at Mr. Kelly's.
Impressive.
Which is really something.
Yeah, says a lot.
Isn't Muddy that- Water. Well, also Muddy Waters played Kelly's.
Wow.
I know. I knew. Look at that look on your face. I know. Nobody remembers something like that. Muddy Waters, you know, in the early 70s, maybe revered by the Rolling Stones and some people.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you would have had to go down to Teresa's or the Checkerboard Lounge to see him here. And all of a sudden, the Marienthal brothers said, we would like you to play Mr. Kelly's. And I cannot even imagine how thrilled... Not only for more money,
sure,
but how thrilled the prestige value of that. It's also talking about Tom Dreesen. When Tom first started out in this business, he was paired with a guy named Tim Reed, African American
Venus Flytrap.
Yes, from WKRP.
Famous as Venus Flytrap. And those two were the first, and as Tom loves to say, the last black and white comedy team ever. There's never been another one. There wasn't like Flip Wilson and Steve Martin.
Right.
It just didn't happen.
It doesn't make sense. You'd think somebody else would pick up on that dynamic. Nobody has.
Because I remember their early act at a place called Le Pub on North Clark Street. Another trip back in time for you people. And they were hysterical because they played off that whole thing. Now, their act would be so politically incorrect.
Right. Yeah, could you even do it now?
No, you
probably
could not.
No,
I say absolutely
never.
Well, they could do it in here, but absolutely not. They could not do it.
Right.
But it was mostly the economics of the whole thing. The club was not large. They couldn't charge a fortune for tickets. And they treated, the other thing about the Marienthal brothers, legendarily, they treated their performers with incredible kid gloves. It wasn't like, you know, no, you can't have a drink. Judy Roberts, the jazz singer who is still around, played for them. To hear her talk about the Marienthal brothers is to hear her talk about, you know, Jesus Christ and Santa Claus.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they treated people with respect.
So during a normal week where they would have the bigger names as headliners, would the bigger names just come in for weekends, or would they do an entire week at Mr. Kelly's?
I think, if memory serves, Bob Newhart, who was an accountant in Chicago, got his first gig at Mr. Kelly's, and it was supposed to be, well, we'd love to have you in for a week, and I think he stayed for a month.
Wow.
And there was also that kind of flexibility there.
Yeah.
Maybe they had to call, you know, Ella Fitzgerald and said, sorry, Ella, you come in later in May because we got this strange comic.
He's doing really well.
Named Bob Newhart. That's what, and a lot of these performers, there's a guy named David Marienthal, who's the son and nephew of Oscar and George, who didn't get in the business. He's my age, went to a different school, but I knew him as a kid. He did not get in the business, even though his parents, his father and uncle, wanted him to, because David was a, you know, long-haired freak, man.
Yeah.
He liked to get high, and he liked to go to the Kinetic Playground. David may have been at Woodstock for all I know.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
But, you see, it's too bad, but it never could have sustained that level of stars.
My parents' first date was at Mr. Kelly's.
No.
My dad took my mom. Now, my dad's Jewish. My mom's Catholic. She wasn't used
God,
to that
that's just like
sort
me.
Of.
You were the
same
small,
thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're one of those mixed breeds.
She was
my
not used
to
call
us Jirish.
Jewish-Irish. She was not used to some of the language that Lenny Bruce used that night. You know,
because where else?
No one else was doing that.
Unless your mother was a truck driver or had been a Marine.
Right.
Yeah, you wouldn't hear that.
A little shocking to hear some of the language.
That was their first date?
That was their first date.
So she thought, something is wrong with this man.
Right.
I must marry him.
It's like taking someone to see, you know, a Deep Throat as a first movie date. Yeah. There's a scene in Taxi Driver where Robert De Niro takes Sybil Shepherd out on a date, and he takes her to one of those 40-second porn films, and she's like, well, I don't think this date's going to work out. Good for your mom.
Yeah, they survived somehow. That's so funny.
Somebody has texted, Mr. Kelly's after prom in 1967 at the Palmer House, went for drinks and to hear Ramsey Lewis, the in crowd. He's still in a memorable night.
Yeah, Ramsey Lewis will talk fondly of not only Mr. Kelly's, but Ramsey was a standard guy at the London House, which
was
right on the corner in the Guarantee Building where some radio station used to be, right at the corner of Michigan and Wacker.
Mm-hmm. Rick Hogan's here. We're reminiscing about Mr. Kelly's. We'll take a quick break and then continue this next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and the legendary Rick Hogan in the studio with
us. You're legendary, Rick.
That's just because I'm old. That's just because I'm old. Well, Rick, what'd you do at Woodstock? Well, I didn't go there, but my friends went there, and they told me all about it. Hey, do you ever go to Mr. Kelly's? Yeah, I've been there. What about Riverview, Rick? Did you ever go there? Oh, yeah, I've been there. Oh, yeah.
That's better than old guy.
Yeah. Legendary, so way better.
Do, you know, this is what people used to do with studs. Studs, do you remember the Black Sox scandal? I never forget. I was 7 years old, and I was So I'm filling that role as the collector.
That's so funny.
Did you remember when there was no Ferris wheel in the Navy Pier? Oh, yeah,
I remember those days.
But it's fun. It's fun. You know, I think that's why there's so much, you know, to do around Woodstock. We celebrate anniversaries all the time, but it brings people, even those people who weren't there, back to their youth when they didn't have a crummy job, where they didn't have a goofball boss,
right?
No bills,
where they didn't have kids who were running wild, where life was freer and indeed more exciting, and everything seemed possible.
Yeah,
peace and love.
Right. Yep.
Look where we are on those scores. Yeah.
Yeah. That's. Yeah. It'll get back again.
But I still think for Kelly's, I'm sure when your parents, Bill, ever think about, you know, what it was like, that there's a jolt of excitement.
Of course.
There on that world's strangest first date. Stranger, second only to Robert De Niro's first date with Sybil Shepherd and Taxi Driver.
You can go to ChicagoTribune.com, and Mr. Kelly's documentary, Nightclub Owners' Stories Are Becoming History. You wrote a column.
You can go to MrKelly's.com. David Marienthal is in the process of making a documentary. He's been working on it for about... He came back from his travels, and we sat in Ricardo's, another place long gone, and he said, what about making a documentary of Mr. Kelly's? I go, look, there are a lot of people still out there, and if they would be willing to talk to you about their memories, this would make a great documentary. He's gotten everybody. He got Woody Allen.
Really?
Which is hard to get Woody Allen to sit down. He got Lily Tomlin to sit down and talk to him. Judy Roberts, a big part of this. He got Streisand. He's gotten everybody. Every time I see David, I say, well, who'd you talk? Well, we went out to Los Angeles and met with Shecky Green.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Because... All those performers, Mr. Kelly's was without argument the most famous nightclub in Chicago for roughly 20 years.
Yeah.
You got booked there. There was no, you know, Vegas was a desert, but it wasn't,
right.
You know, you had the Rat Pack, but you couldn't just go play Vegas. It was a big deal. That combined with the fact that the Marienthal brothers treated these performers with respect, not like employees.
Yeah.
But with the respect they deserved.
Was the Pump Room running concurrently with this? It was, wasn't it?
The Pump Room opened in probably about 1934, and was in the time, because the guy who ran it was named Ernie Byfield, and he knew. His father used to be one of the people who ran the Sherman House with the late Justice Stevens, Chief Justice Stevens and Dad. And what he used to do is he would send cars down to the train stations, and any celebrity who was stopping in Chicago, because you did have to stop the train to change from either New York to L.A., either way, this is where you changed, he would say, please, Miss Garbo, we have a suite for you at the Ambassador East Hotel. Would you please come over and change clothes and take a nap? And maybe if you're there, go to the Pump Room. So it was that role.
That's genius.
Ernie Byfield.
So smart.
When Ernie Byfield died, I did a book about the Ambassador years and years ago and the Pump Room. You look in the old newspaper clippings. When Ernie Byfield died, it was main headline of all 8 papers in Chicago.
Yeah.
And he really was a genius. His whole notion was, he used to have a lot of flaming foods, like flaming shish kebab. He said he never wanted bored diners.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's everybody came there. I mean, Judy Garland would, Stanley Paul was still a piano player here, as a young pianist at the Room. And during dinner with people, Judy Garland would get up, maybe loaded, I don't know, and like go up to the piano and just start singing songs for the audience. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know. And now what do we got? You know, ooh, let's go have the world's most involved hamburger.
Right.
Randall's.
I know. Didn't it, when the Pump Room stopped being the Pump Room, didn't they then call it Byfields for a bit? They did, right?
No, there was a club. There was a little tiny, I'm surprised you never played there. Across the lobby, there was a small, small nightclub called Byfields.
And that was Byfields.
Run by a woman named Denise McGowan.
Oh, sure.
And she, I mean, she booked Mort Saul in there. I saw Mort Saul there a number of times. The best act I ever saw in there, was, his name was Max Maven, and he was a mind reader, okay? So I go there with my then-girlfriend and her mom, and her mom, it's like, oh, my God, this guy is amazing. This is unbelievable, all the things he knows. And she says, maybe I could meet him sometime later after the show. And I said, sure, Denise. And we go out there, and I'm reviewing the show, and he's like, nice to meet you. I go, look, could I possibly have your phone number?
Yeah.
And he starts writing it down, and he can't remember his own phone number.
Oh, my God.
Read your own mind, you idiot. Why don't you read your own mind?
I worked with Max Maven in a comedy club once, and he had the ability, he would bring people up on stage and convince them that they were either really cold or really hot or naked or whatever. And I never saw anything like that. I have no idea how he pulled this off.
It was pretty good. I don't think he wasn't a mind reader, but he had good tricks. He had good tricks.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
read your own mind.
That's great.
So you mentioned some celebrities that are going to do this documentary. There's only a handful of people still working that ever worked at Mr. Kelly's, right? Is there a dozen or so maybe now?
Well, Smothers Brothers. I don't think
Bob Newhart.
He got Newhart. He's got Newhart.
Yeah.
I don't think he's gone to jail to see Bill Cosby, which would have been interesting.
But Mr. Cosby worked there on several occasions.
Mr. Cosby?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Kelly's Mr. Cosby.
One of the things about Kelly's, the place that broke downtown the color barrier about entertainment was actually the Playboy Club, which was on Walton Street just west of Michigan. And the way that happened was they had booked... Time travel, everybody. They had booked in there Dr. Irwin Corey, who you,
the
Bill,
professor,
probably your mother may have dated him, or
for a little bit, yes,
or you performed with him or something.
Yeah.
And he could not perform; he was sick or something.
Oh.
And he recommended Dick Gregory.
Oh, really?
And so Dick Gregory is the first African American to break the so-called unspoken color line in upscale clubs in this whole city in about, my guess, maybe 59-ish, something like that.
Yeah.
But that's who it was.
And that was shocking at the time.
Well, and the Marienthal brothers were totally colorblind in that aspect,
good,
too.
And there very
were,
good.
There were restaurants downtown at the time, and certainly in the 50s, where black couples couldn't go to dinner. Mm. You'd get turned away. Downtown Chicago. Mm.
See, that just amazes me that was the 1950s. It seems like that was million years ago.
Or it amazes you that it was Chicago. In that, I know this probably happened in Mississippi and the Deep South into the 50s, but huh?
Not here.
Not here. Sophisticated old Chicago. I'll never forget. I hate to keep boring you with stories, but...
Hardly.
When I was a young man going to Ricardo's after work at the Sun-Times and... at the Daily News where I worked, and I'd go to Ricardo's for drinks after work, and every night, Friday nights especially, at about 5:30 there would be one or two elderly black couples who would come in and have dinner. No one was eating at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked my father, who certainly has a deeper roots in Chicago history than I could. He goes, he was worried about my drink. He goes, how's everything going on Friday nights at Ricardo's? I go, I'm fine. I said, but there's something really interesting that I see these elderly black couples come in for a very kind of formal meal in the restaurant. And he told me, he said, well, that's because Ricardo's was one of the few places in Chicago in the 50s where black couples felt welcome.
Wow. Wow.
I know, it's pretty amazing, and in its way, it's really sad.
It is sad.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been punched in the gut. It's Chicago.
That's what time travel can do. You don't just hear funny stories about Bill's parents.
No, yeah, I know. It gets you in the gut
and their first date. Or about the fabulous Bill Cosby.
Can we do this more often? Are you good with that?
I'm very close, and I really admire you guys.
Thank you, mutually.
Love you, Rick.
That's Rick Kogan, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.